Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Beit. We're holding on daf Chof Aleph Omud Beit, and we were talking about the writing of a get on something which is mechuber lekarka. So this leads us to an interesting question, what is the status of a flower pot which has a nekev in it, so it has a hole in the bottom? It's very interesting questions over here. So that means that the dirt in that flower pot, if you plant something in it, is considered to be mechuber lekarka because it's considered to still be yonek min hakarka. This is a fascinating thing. So now, can you write a get on the atzitz, on the flower pot? Now there's a secondary issue. Suppose you would write the get on a tree in the flower pot. Right? A plant, and you write it on the leaf of the plant. Now, we know that you can't break off the leaf and give it, because that's the problem of Vikata v'Natan. We have to go directly from the Ktivat and the Tina without anything in between. But could you write it on a leaf on the plant and then pick up the flower pot and give her the flower pot as the Nesinas HaGet? There's a number of interesting issues that are involved in that. Because the truth is that picking up the flower pot is really the equivalent of breaking the plant out of the ground, right? Because as long as the flower pot's on the ground with the nekev, it's considered to still be getting its nourishment. That's called yonika, it's yonek min hakarka. So, okay, all of these questions are things that we're going to consider today. And we start on the third line up from the bottom of Chof Aleph Amud Beis. Kitavo acheres shel atzitz nakuv kasher. If you write it on the actual cheres itself, on the pottery part of an atzitz, so that doesn't matter. The fact that the dirt inside of the atzitz, inside of the pot, may be considered to be connected to the ground, it's irrelevant because I'm not writing it on the dirt. I'm writing it on the pot. The pot itself is obviously not part of the ground. And therefore, if I pick up the pot and I hand it to her, there would be no problem. So, katvon acheres shel atzitz nakuv kasher. Why? Deshakulei v'yoyv le'nehala. You simply pick it up and you hand it to her. Now, we're going to see that we do have problems. We actually did see, in a sense, because we talked about the issues where you have to give the entire thing and where we don't worry that maybe you will break off part of it. So, therefore, we understand, if you have an Eved, not only can you write a tattoo and give the Eved, but we're not even concerned, obviously, that you would cut off his hand and give him the hand instead, or even on the para that you would cut off the horn and give the horn instead. But over here, would we be concerned maybe you'll break off the part of the pot that has the shtar of the get written on it? Also not. Why would you bust the pot? The problem, however, is, what if you write it alaleh shel atzitz nakuv? You have a plant that's growing in there, and you write the get on one of the leaves of the plant, and you give her the whole atzitz. Now, do we have to worry that maybe you would come to break off the leaf and give her the leaf? And then that would be doing a step in between the Ketivah and the Tinah. So Yitzi and Ariel have taken their training in Hogwarts today and are listening very careful, despite the fact that they're both wearing invisibility cloaks. This is quite a trick. But don't let them fool you. They are sitting there with full attention. All right. Look, that's better than just putting up your name, right? I mean, it's bigger kunst to wear an invisibility cloak. That's a cynical approach. Okay. So that's the question. Abaya says it's kosher. Rava says it's possible. Abaya says it's kosher. Because what's the problem? You could simply lift up the entire pot and you give her the pot. So there's no issue. But Yavlon Yala, Rav Amar Paso, because of the Gezerah that we mentioned, maybe you will break off the leaf and hand it to her. So therefore, there's an additional concern that we have. So the other cases that we had similar to this are not a concern because obviously you're not going to break something or destroy something in order to give it her. But the interesting point is that some of the Rishonim bring up is if the something that's planted in the pot is considered to be yonek min hakarka, so then would the ground in the pot, if I now, I lift up the pot, so haven't I also done an act of ketsira? So there is a ketsira that comes between the ketiva and the netina. But the point is that it's irrelevant because it's not a separate act, correct? I can lift up the pot and hand it to her the same way I would lift up anything else and hand it to her. So the fact that that happens to also achieve a ketsira is irrelevant to the get. And therefore, it's a direct netina. Okay, that's the Ron's teretz to this problem. But there's another issue here, which is a fascinating issue, that just it raises in your mind. This is an issue that it's interesting. Reb Shlomo Zalman Zatzal, he actually wrote about this issue of Benogea Shmita. What's the din of the ground that's inside of the Atzitz Nakuv? Is the ground itself considered to be mechubar to the ground outside of it so that you wouldn't be allowed to do avodat hakarka, let's say, to that ground during Shvias? Or is it just that the yanika of something growing is considered to be coming through the hole from the ground underneath, but that doesn't mean that the ground per se is considered to actually be part of the earth underneath, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to do avodat karka in it during Shemitah? Also a fascinating question. Now, what's another issue is, the Gemara wants to know and brings out, this is so beautiful, it brings out a concept which is called, Gavi seems to be quite busy, but he'll remember this because it's easy to write it down, and it's called Kinyan Agav. Kinyan Agav means that while you are being kinyan, something that is a real estate, you can be kona along with it something that is metaltalin. And that's a fascinating question over here, because basically the atzitz is itself contains ground that something growing in is considered to be mechubar lekarka, and therefore to have a din of karka, and you wouldn't be able to be kena it unless you did a kinyan that's suitable for karka. Now remember, in order to be kena karka, you need either kesev, shtar, or chazaka. In order to be kena metal to him, you need to do mishicha. What if you did mishicha on karka? How could you do mishicha on karka? I got a cute idea. Put it into an atzitz nakuv, lift up the atzitz nakuv. So then you actually did a hagba'ah on the karka. Well, we see from here, that's not going to work. So the question is, let's say one guy owns the actual flower pot and somebody else owns the plants that are growing in the flower pot, and now they want to sell out to each other. So in that case, if machar ba'al ha'atzitz le'bal ha'arzera'im, so the guy who owns the pot, if he sells it to the one who owns the plant, so then once he picks up or he draws it close to him, mishicha, that's considered to be a proper kinyan on a pot. But suppose the Baal Hazraim wants to sell his plant to the Baal Ha'atzitz. Well, you can't pick up a growing plant because that's real estate. So then you would have to actually do an act of kinyan, which could be, of course, mammon, but we're clearly talking about a case of a year where there was no kesev that changed hands. So you would have to be actually machzik in the Zraim. So you'd have to do something, let's say, weeding it, you know, or maybe hoeing it, whatever, but something that actually is beneficial to the growing thing in the pot. That's considered to be a chazakah, as if it would be a field. Now, how about a case where the same guy owns an atzitz and owns zera'im? He wants to sell both to another. That person goes ahead, and he's machzik in the zera'im. Okay, so he does something beneficial, and let's say he weeds the pot, so that the things growing in the pot have now benefited. So he's showing an act of ownership. That's called chazaka. If he did that, then he would also be kone the flower pot. Why? That is called kinyan agav. And a kinyan agav is, as we've learned in the famous Mishnah in Kiddushin, nechasim she'en lehem achrayut, which means mitaltalim. Mitaltalim can never be recouped because they are owned by the person that's holding them. And therefore, since you can't take them away, they're called en lehem achrayut. If you need to recover your money from this guy, when he gets rid of anything that is metatalim, you can't collect it. But nechasib sheyesh lemachrayut, that's real estate, and over there we have the equivalent of a title insurance. Whoever had the lien first is the one that gets it, so it's called, it has responsibility to you, insurance for you, achrayut. So there, if you're konen the nechasim, sheyesh lemachrayut with kesev or shtar, or chazaka, which are the three possible ways of being kind of real estate, you automatically would be kind of along with it, any nechasim she'en lehem achrayut that you established as being part of this kinyan. The question, by the way, over here, is this a side point which Tosfos raises, do you need to establish in this case that you mean to be kind of together? Normally you do. But since over here, it's quite possible that it's obvious that you're trying to get the whole thing together. So for sure, the chazaka would be sufficient to be kaina without mentioning. And by doing this act of kinyan on the seeds, I'll be kaina automatically the atzitz. You don't have to say that even possibly. Okay, so over here, these ra'im have a din of real estate. But suppose you do it the other way around. Let's say you do an act of chazaka to the atzitz. So let's say you polish up the atzitz, make it look really nice, you know, clean it off, which is what an owner would do. Not going to help you. Because the only way to be kena on atzitz, which is simply metaltalim, and the fact that it has ground in it, or things growing in it that are considered to be connected to the ground, doesn't change the status of the actual cheres, of the earthenware, of the pot itself, right? So if you try to do that, and you polished up the pot, you wouldn't be kona anything. You wouldn't even be kona the atzitz. Kol shekein, you wouldn't be kona the zraim in the atzitz. And instead, the only thing you can do is to be kona the zraim. So if you're going to do a chazaka, then you'd have to do a chazaka on the things growing, and then you would be kona the pot as a kinyan agav. Now, what would be the din of this pot, once we're on the topic, Binogeya, the question of taking off ma'aser. So this issue is raised in a different way. Because when you have a pot that's got a hole in the bottom, and the things in the pot are being nourished through nutrients that are being absorbed through that hole, then the question is, does that define the entirety of the dinim of what's growing there? Or is a plant actually nourished in two ways? The plant is nourished through its root system. However, there's a constant absorption of nutrients and minerals and all kinds of things by the leaves themselves because of the airspace in which they are. And so we can't consider the nourishment to be entirely through the hole in which the rising nourishment from the ground, where we don't have roots that are penetrating through the hole. Remember, we're talking about just, you've got the actual ground is over the ground, and we're saying that somehow the fact that there's a hole there is going to provide the gases that are necessary and for the plant is going to come through that hole. But that's true for the leaves as well. So the question is, what do we look at as being more important? Let's imagine a case where you've got a flower pot, one of these long planting pots. It's located on the border of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And it's a long pot. It has a hole in it, in the part that's in Eretz Yisrael. And on the other side, you've got all of these plants that are growing. And maybe you planted a little vegetable garden where the nourishment could be coming through the hole, which is in Eretz Yisrael. So now what would be the din over there? The Nekev is in Eretz Yisrael, and the Nof, that is the actual leaves of the plant, is growing in Chutz La'aretz. So what defines the status of the Chiyuvim on it? So Baya says, if you're talking about the Dinim of Maaser, let's say, Shumas and Maaseres, you go according to where the main nourishment is coming, which is through the area that's directly over the ground with its roots. So that would be the place where the hole is in the bottom. Where Rava says no, you would go in this case, Batar Nofo Azlinan, it depends where the actual leaves are growing, and that is where the main nourishment is going to be coming from. And therefore, since it's inside Chutz La'aretz, it's not going to be chayev in Meiser. Now, Bida Ashrush, in the event, now this is how Rashi learns. It's a big machlokas rishonim. Rashi's pshat makes a great deal of sense here in the context of what we're learning. Rashi learns Bida Ashrush means where the roots have grown out of the hole into the land underneath. And that is a very simple, straightforward way of learning the sugya. So Bida Ashrush, where the roots grew through the hole into the ground, there everybody agrees that clearly the difference between an actual root system that's bringing nourishment and the air in which the leaves are growing, there's no comparison. The main nourishment of the plant is clearly coming through its root system. We were only arguing where the root system itself is actually getting its nourishment from the ground underneath through a giving over through steam that's rising from the ground. So it's basically that which it's absorbing through the air, ultimately. So then, if you have the leaves also absorbing nourishment through the air, so there we have a machlokas, which one is primary in terms of defining the chiyuvim of Trumas and Maaseres. But where you actually have roots that are extending into the soil of Eretz Yisrael, obviously 90% of real nourishment is coming directly from the root system. The only machlokas between Abaye and Rav over here, says the Gemara, is Bidalo Ashrush, where there was no root system in the ground itself. Now, wait a minute. I think you're jumping to the conclusion over here, asks the Gemara. You're saying that everybody agrees that in the event that the roots actually penetrated into the earth in Eretz Yisrael, that you would have to take off Trumas and Maaseres, Midiraisa? Vatnan, what do we do about the famous Mishnah, which is talking about an interesting case, fascinating case. You've got a garden next to another garden, but one garden is on a raised piece of ground. So imagine a case where you've got a multi-leveled housing development, right? So some people have gardens that are raised, and other people have their garden a little bit lower, maybe 10 feet lower, and another guy's got it 10 feet lower than him. Now, imagine that you have things that are growing on the vertical wall between the two gardens. That's a fascinating point, because what that would mean is that the root system of whatever is growing is from the upper garden, but the airspace is over the lower garden. Now, that seems to be very much similar. I mean, there it's talking about who owns what, you know, but it's very similar to our case here. The roots are growing in Eretz Yisrael, and the leaves and branches are extending into Chutz La'aretz. And you claimed that if the roots are actually in the ground, nobody would think that where it is that the leaves are is important. But here it says in the Mishnah that when it comes to the question of ownership, it's very important indeed. Because in the event that you have shteganot zoa gavizu, and you have yerek, you have these vegetables that are growing on the vertical wall between the two levels, so there we have a machlokas. Rebbe Meir says the vegetables belong to the one who owns the upper area. They're growing out of his ground. Whereas Rebbe Yehuda Omer, no, they are growing over the ground of the other person. So this seems to be exactly the question that we're dealing with. Is the main nourishment, even in a case where they are literally actually rooted? And it says over here that nonetheless Rabbi Yehuda holds. You said nobody holds this. Here it says Rabbi Yehuda holds. You don't look at where those roots are coming from the upper guy. You look at where the actual plant is, which is over the airspace of the lower guy. Says the Gemara, no, you make a mistake. Over there, the machlokas is not nogea, the question of where the nourishment is coming from. Over there is a different issue. It's kidiktani taima. Omer Rabbi Meir, ma im yirtze ha'elyon litol et afaro, en kan yerek. Let me ask you something. Does the guy on the upper level, would he have a right to dig out his garden and build an air raid shelter there? He would. So what happens to poor plant if he does that? Bye-bye plant. So, I mean, if he has the right to do that, so then obviously it must be his plant. So that's the question. And therefore, when Rabbi Yehuda says, we're talking over here about finances, who's got the rights to the land? And because of that, the machlokas is that Rabbi Yehuda says, okay, but the guy on the bottom, if he wanted to build something up along the airspace, along the vertical wall, he would be allowed to do that. And if he did that, bye-bye plant too. So why isn't he considered to be the owner? So anyway, apparently the issue over here is not nogea, the nourishment. Now, it's very interesting because over there in the sugya itself, the Gemara continues and says that Rabbi Meir Taina's, okay, so if they both have equal claim, so then why don't we look at where the plant is drawing its nourishment from? So how it is that we're ignoring that part of the issue is not quite clear. But anyway, okay, we're simplifying this into a completely different monetary claim. Okay, but so you can't bring a raya from here. Maybe this is what they're arguing about. Okay, but I still can bring a raya from somewhere else. You're telling me, Bida Ashra Shlo Pligi, that if the roots are actually rooted in Eretz Yisrael Karka, that then everybody agrees that it's Chayev and Trumas or Maisras? Well, what are you going to say about this Braita, Vatanya? You have a tree that is Miktzato Ba'aretz, Miktzato B'chutz La'aretz. The tree is right on the border. Half of the trunk of the tree is over Eretz Yisrael, and half is over Chutz La'aretz. So then what you have over here is that the peirot that grow from this tree is a mixture of Tevel and Chulin. The part that grows, again, the Yeraisa, the part that grows over the Chutz La'aretz is drawing nourishment. So it's mixed. Some of the roots are drawing nourishment from one side, and some are drawing from the other side, and so they're all mixed. And therefore, we don't have a clear-cut Chiyav that we would have of normal Tevel. So says Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, well, look at the part of the tree that's growing in Chutz La'aretz and look at the part of the tree that's growing in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Hagadol b'chiyuv chayav, so the fruit that's on the side of Eretz Yisrael is chayav, and the fruit that is in Chutz La'aretz is potter. Now, I mean, what I'm assuming is what we're talking about over here is that we've got miktzat nofo ba'aretz, or miktzat nofo b'chutz la'aretz. We're not looking at the roots over here. We're saying, take a look at the branches, wherever the tree is bringing out the fruit. So the branches that are growing in chutz la'aretz, the fruit that's growing on the part of the branch that's in chutz la'aretz is pater, and the part growing in the branch that's in Eretz Yisrael is chayev, right? So then that means that we would look at the branches, even though, obviously, this tree has its roots, some of its roots are in Eretz Yisrael, and we look at the branch. So how can the Gemara say over here that no, for sure, Rava agrees with Abaya that if it actually gets roots that grow in the soil of Eretz Yisrael, that for sure, we would never talk about what's on the branches. And here we do. Says the Gemara, well, that's your interpretation. Why does that have to be the interpretation? Lo, why don't we talk about it? We're saying over here, not the part of the branch that's in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, but rather the roots. What it means over here is we've got some of the roots growing in Eretz Yisrael and some of the roots growing in Chutz La'aretz. And what we're saying is that the part, the side of the tree that has roots underneath it that are growing in Eretz Yisrael is chayim. The side of the tree with fruits where the roots on that side are in Chutz La'aretz is Pater. And we're not talking about the branches at all. Who's to say that that's what Reb Shimon meant? So, and what did he mean, Reb Shimon? My time in Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? I mean, certainly, if you're talking about the nourishment of a tree, you don't have a one-to-one relationship of a root that goes directly to one part of a tree as opposed to the other part of the tree. Roots are a system in which all of what comes up from the root are distributed through the tree with a very complex sap system, which is a true circulation, like blood is. I mean, what are you going to say to a human being? He eats something with the right side of his mouth. It goes to the right side. I mean, this seems ridiculous. So how could Reb Shimon ben Gamliel claim that one side of the tree is going to be growing from the roots on one side, and the other side, that fruit that are growing from the roots on another side? Ah, well, what we're talking about over here is a very unique case, says the Gemara. Here we're talking about an artificially separated root system. How did you do that? What happened is that this tree is growing on the border where underneath it there is a very solid piece of rock that comes straight up all the way to the top of the soil. And this root, one of them is separated out by this rock that's forcing all of the roots to one side of the rock. And that goes on for, I don't know, 30, 40 feet. I mean, it's just like pushing all the roots out. And on the other side, we've got the rock pushing the roots out to the other side. So now the question is this. Is a totally separated root system, does it indeed continue to provide nourishment for the entire tree? Or do we say that since that rock comes all the way to the surface, essentially what you have over here is two different trees, each of which is growing from a highly developed root system, which is separated from the rest of the tree. And therefore, though it appears to us to be a single organism, it's basically two, it's like sort of like a Siamese twin where you don't realize that you're looking at a twin. So that what you've got is a clone tree, but part of it is living from there, and part of it is living from the other place. So that's a possibility. It's very interesting, by the way. There are such trees that are called clones. And in fact, there's one gigantic tree, which is now recognized as the largest living organism on Earth, that looks like a forest, but is actually one tree, all mechuber underneath with these varied pieces coming up, and they're all drawing from the same interrelated root system. Their DNA is exactly the same. They're part of the same organism. And they look like a forest, but they're really a tree. So next time says, you can't see the forest for the trees, keep in mind that that could mean something much more powerful. Anyway, so that's the question. In such a case, would we consider the entire thing to be one circulation as well? Or do we look at it as different trees? So that is the machlokas. Rebbe says, despite the fact that you've got separated root systems, it makes absolutely no difference because in the tree itself, there are mechanisms to mix the nourishment coming up from both systems, and therefore hadre arve. And in the area of the tree that's above the surface, they will still mix. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel hold that they won't. Rebbe held that even though you've got separated root systems in the area above the ground, which is called the Avira, you still have circulation that mixes. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel holds, Marasovar, because the tree has developed with separate root systems, it has also developed separate circulation. And Chai L'chudekoi, V'ai L'chudekoi. Fine, all of this is part of the Agav discussion that we've had about Agav. Anyway, continues now the next issue that we had in the Mishnah. We had a machlokas. Reb Yehuda ben Batera says, you cannot write a get on non-secure paper. So in other words, if this paper is not going to show up an erasure, so then you have no idea what it was written here on the get before. And maybe somebody had some complicated t'nai, that this get will be valid only when I receive $100,000 in my bank account. You erased all of that, and or maybe you wrote in some other Tanai. Who knows what you did? And you utilized the signatures that were there from before over an erasure, and they don't notice that you also erased, because anyway there was an erasure, and now it looks like the original writing. You can't, therefore, use a get on erased paper, or you can't use it on diftera, which we need to explain. But obviously, diftera is something which is not going to show erasures. So once we're at it, we need to discuss the technicalities of the words for different part of an animal, different levels of working on animal hides. Now, there's very complex distinctions. Don't get confused between them. We have, when it comes to the question of safrut, we have the dinim of hide in terms not only of how the hide was tanned or worked or finished, we also have the question of how the hide was split and on which side of which type of split you can write on. That's a completely different question. Where over there, we're dealing with safrut. Here, we're not talking about the splitting of a hide. We're talking about the work that's done on the hide. And it's because of this that we don't discuss the issue of klaf here. Because klaf is a completely different halacha. It's not called hide at all. We look at it as a type of writing material. Here we're talking about actual hide, and it's been worked to different levels. So what are those three levels? Shalosh orote. It says Rabbi Chiya bar Asi Mishmei De'ula. There are three types of skins that are still called skins as opposed to klaf, and they have different dinim in terms of the shiurim that are nogea hilchos Shabbos, as we'll see. One of them is called matzah, one of them is called chefa, and one of them is called diftera. Now the matzah, this is by the way a beautiful indication of the nature of matzah when it comes to Pesach, because the reason we call it matzah is kemashma'o. It's completely unadulterated. It's untouched. That's the point. We want to get down on Pesach, we get down to the raw reality of the blood, sweat, tears, and pure grain. So that's lo maliach, lo kamiach, lo afitz. We didn't do the normal things that we do to a hide, which is first we salt it, dry it out, then we use flour on it to make it even more. This is the same thing that you do for your telephone that fell into the toilet bowl. And the lo afitz, and it also wasn't treated with the gallnuts that we were talking about before, which finish off the hide. And what's the point of talking about matzah that has a special class for shiurim? We're talking about in terms of hotza'ah. So there's a minimal shear of hotza'ah for each thing, which is its primary simple usage. And that would be the shear of the hotza'ah. So what is that shear? The kama shiro of matzah. Kidiktani Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, kidei latzur mishkal ktana. Matzah is a very soft, unworked skin, and it's very usable for protection. So if you have, let's say, lead weights, and those are easily wrecked, because the minute they get a scratch, or they rub against something, it changes the weight slightly. And you, of course, are very machmir not to have illegal weights. So you need to protect them. And you protect them with a soft leather cover, which is made out of matzah. And even a very small weight, which is a tiny amount of matzah that you would need, that's enough to be mechayev you for Shabbos because this is usable matzah. V'kama, Omer Abaye, ki riva de pumpadisa. It's the 1/16th weight in pumpadisa, which is tiny. So that would be the shear of matzah. What is chefa? Chefa is maliach. It went through the very first stage of salting, but it's not kamiach and it's not afitz. And what is it good for? Well, what it's good for is going to define its din of Hotzah Shabbos. It's good for, as its name indicates, it's good for chefa. What is chefa? to be chofe, meaning that it's bent over something, in this case, a kamiya. So what we want to do, it has to be large enough to be, Rashi actually uses the word to be chofe, because he's trying, I'm assuming, he's trying to explain to us why it has the word chifa. So you make a kamiya, which is whatever it is, some type of amulet, and then you cover that over with a little piece of chifa. So it's chofe, it's bent over the kamiya. And what is diftura? Diftura is both maliach and kamiach, but it still hasn't been finished for writing on. Lamayachata also for hotza'at Shabbat. And what good is that? That is kidei lichtov alav et haget. So you're not allowed to write tefillin on it, and therefore doesn't have the shear of kalaf, let's say, which would be parsha ketana shebetfilin. But according to the Rabbanan in this Mishnah that we just had, that they argue with Rabbi Yehuda, they say you can write a get on diftara. That would be the shear for hotza'at Shabbat. And then we said the Chachamim are machshir. And why indeed are the Chachamim machshir? Why aren't we worried exactly about the problem of the issue of erasures and therefore the whole thing being completely useless because the signatures don't prove anything? Now, for those of you, especially Mr. Gavi here, of course, Moshe is not here, but it looks like Gavi's going to have to take up the whole issue. The question of the Rambam in Hilchas Gittin. So now this issue is coming to the fore for the first time here in detail, and that is, what would be the nafgamina between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim in terms of falsibility or the ability to actually erase and therefore ashtar being useless? And this is going to turn out to be very meaningful in overall understanding the halachas of Eidos on a get. So who are these Chachamim that could possibly have said, we simply don't care that you can fake the get? I mean, that's ridiculous. How could such a thing be true? Says the Gemara, these Chachamim are Rabbi Elazar. It's Rabbi Elazar. Because since, according to Rabbi Elazar, Ede Misira Akarte, the entire issue, according to Rabbi Elazar, of a get, is that that which makes the get a get is the Ede Misira. And we learned that out from the pasuk of Davar, Davar, Apish Shlaim Edim, Yakum Davar. So therefore, you absolutely would need to have these Ede Mesira. Now, we said before that Ede Mesira, they would have to be reading the get when they are then going to witness giving it over. We said they're Chayavim Likro. So that would mean that what it is written really doesn't bother us, because according to Rebbe Lazar, a woman who wants now the best into Paskin, that she is a Pnuya, and that she can get married, she would have to come into Besdin, and she would need to bring Ede Misira. And the Ede Misira are going to look at this get, and they're going to say, wait a minute, this is not the get that we witnessed. The get we witnessed had a condition in it. Or the get we witnessed didn't have a condition, whatever the case is. And therefore, say the Rabbanan, who cares if you could fake the get? We don't care about the get. We care about the Aiden anyway, because what good will the get do a woman who cannot produce the witnesses that say that the get was given to her? After all, Davar Davar says, either you can produce those witnesses or this is a meaningless thing. So therefore, we have nothing to worry about. But it cannot be going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir, because if Rabbi Meir holds, we don't need Ede Misira. So then, if you're going to be Semech on the Ede Chatima, what does it mean? And Rashi talks this out. This is very important to note. What does it mean when it says you're Semech on Ede Chatima? Does it mean that you bring the Edim that are signed and that they then tell you this is the get we signed on? Of course not. The halacha is that if you can be mekayim the signatures of these Edim in court, then that is the get, because of the fact you have the get, and this get is acknowledged by witnesses to be a get, and How did you get it? Must be that it was given to you. And therefore, put the two together, and we have the equivalent of Eidos. Okay, but then if you can forge it, what good is that? I could be Mekayim the signatures, but I would have no way of knowing that the signatures were initially signed on the document that I have in front of me, because it's erasable. So it's ridiculous. According to Rebbe Meir, it would mean that it's a piece of nonsense to say that I have witnesses to a get. Maybe what I have witnesses to is to a movie ticket. This entitles a person to one entry to such and such a film. You erase that, and then you wrote a get on it. I'm like, it could be anything. So, therefore, says the Gemara, this has got to be going. I'll leave it to Rabbi Elazar. Now, what's fascinating is, this is absolutely wild. What is the implication of these things for shtarot in general? Remember, according to Rabbi Elazar, if you're going to tell me that the Eidut of Mesira is the essential meaning of a shtar, now that would be true of any shtar that would be utilized for the consummation of the thing itself, right? So if I'm going to be selling you a piece of property, so then according to Rabbi Elazar, I need to have Eidei Mesira on that shtar, okay? And remember that we learned out from the din of Sefer HaMikneh, which is talked about with Yirmiyahu and his cousin, and Dodo, comes along and he makes the sale, the whole beautiful description of the last moments before the Churban HaBayis, in which they're going to go out into Golis, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows them that make sure that you keep all of your transactions and your records, and because this is just a temporary hitch. Things will be back in order in no time at all. So make sure, well, Yamim Rabim, but make sure that you can keep it for those Yamim Rabim. And it says over there, V'ekach et Sefer HaMikneh. So that means there needs to be a Sefer which has the same din as the Sefer that we have the Katavla Sefer Kritut, and so it would have the same din. Now, comes along Rabbi Elazar, and that is, of course, talking about not the Tana Rabbi Elazar, the Amora Rabbi Elazar, and he says that this is going Aliba, the Rabbi Elazar, which is it's a little bit confusing, but this Rabbi Elazar that we're talking about is obviously, this is the Tana of Rabbi Elazar that we're talking about over here. So in other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat wants us to know what Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa said. Okay, so don't get confused about who's who. And furthermore, said Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the lo hichshir Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa, he was only telling you that such a get would be kosher, even though it can be forged, if you bring it to the Beis Din right away. So then if you bring it to the Beis Din right away, then all of the details are going to be remembered by the Edim. And therefore, we rely on it, even though it could have been forged. And once the Beis Din will see it, then the Beis Din is koveya the halakha for this woman, and the get is done with. It's over. This is a very important nekuda. So the establishment of her status, because when we say ervad davar, we're talking about status. The description of that status takes place in Beis Din. And once it's presented to the Beis Din, shuv eina tzricha leget, says Rashi. There's no need for the get. The get is totally meaningless at this point. Because kivan shehutra bebedin, these are very important concepts also in the Rambam's learning. Once the Beis Din was koveya the heter, then that establishes her status because yesh zikaron vekol ledavar. And there is a davar, note the davar use in Rashi. He's very careful about his language. So the davar mi erva, that davar is kavua once it's been established in court. So the get does not have to act permanently as a davar. And therefore, the mesira, the Eidei mesira, have to establish things quickly in Beis Din. And as long as they quickly establish it, we don't care about its possible forgery because they're going to have it in their minds. Well, we just saw that. That's not what we saw and read this morning. What the heck's going on? It's obviously been forged. But otherwise, we can't be certain that they're going to remember every detail and note whether there was some issue that had been there before that isn't, or vice versa. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan Omer, not true. Eidus is Eidus, and there's no limit to the time. Afilu mikan va'ad asara yamim. Because, look, if there was something over here that had been erased, let's say there was a t'nai, and she erases the t'nai, this was only a get when you pay me $100,000, and she erased that little line, they would remember. Mitkar dekire, and that is the whole purpose of Edim. The Amar Rabbi Elazar, furthermore, said Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the Amora, lo hichsha Rabbi Elazar, meaning Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa, the Tana, he was only machsher begitin. This idea that we don't care about the possibility of forgery, that's because we're talking about gittin. And the whole point of gittin is that we want to be able to establish the davar. That davar is her status. She utilizes this get to immediately establish that davar. She does not utilize a get to be an accompaniment to her throughout life, so that if 30 years from now she decides to get married, she has a get. No, nobody does that. The get is brought to Besdin. Besdin issues a psak that this woman is a divorcee, and they actually write up a document that she's a divorcee, and they actually tear the get with a kerah beidin to avoid problems of her suing for a ketuvah when claiming that the get was never utilized, and so on. So that's the whole way that we establish the davar by gittin. And because of this, Rebbe Elazar says, so what do I worry about needing to have a contract that's not forgeable? It'll be brought to Besdin immediately, and I don't need to worry about it. But if you're talking about other types of documentation, so shar shtarot, so let's say you have a bill of sale where you transferred property from one person to another, that is not brought to Besdin. That is kept until it is legally required. And it says so in the Pasuk. Because the Navi actually was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Untatam bekli chares leman yamdu yamim rabim. So he tells the people, when you're going to write up these sales, it should be put into a well-sealed kli chares that will protect it from mice and things like that, because it's going to have to be around for a long time till you go and bring it into court. So then that means the whole point of another type of contract is for it to have longevity, to be able to prove something maybe 100 years from now. Well, what are you going to have the Edei Mesira 100 years from now? And therefore, what we need is something that is reliable over the long term. The davar in that case is the davar that we'll need to have then. And therefore, they cannot be shtarot that are going to be forgeable. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, that's not true. A shtar is a shtar. And if the shtar was created with Edei Mesira, then at that point it gets its din of being a reliable shtar. But Rabbi Yochanan, it says that Yirmiyahu HaNavi insisted Leman yamdu yamim rabim, which is mashma. I mean, why is he telling us tam leman yamdu yamim rabim? I mean, obviously, just to tell us that, hey, boys, you know, you should take good care of your papers and put it in a safe deposit box. I need a navi to tell me that. I mean, what's the point of his saying that? Isn't it to say that you cannot rely on your Edei Mesira? No. It could just be giving us Eitzah Tovah. Why can't a Navi be giving an Eitzah Tovah? If you want to protect yourself, make sure that you have a good safe deposit box. But that doesn't mean that in terms of the legality of the shtar, that it has to be a shtar that essentially includes witnesses that will be around 100 years from now. That is not included. So therefore, Eitzah Tovah, Kamash Malan,